Well, a while back, I was, it was when my wife and I first had my daughter. This week, we just celebrated my daughter's 16th birthday. And so, if you notice a few more gray hairs in there, you'll know why. Because not only am I paying more in insurance, but she's driving. But but one of the things that happened, and why I'm thinking about that is, years back, I decided to start and do an adventure race. And it was right when my wife was pregnant. Guys, just in case you're wondering, if you want to start working out, that is probably not the best time to start working out as your wife is starting to get bigger. So if you don't know why, just lean over and ask and get ready for this. So I start working out and go do this adventure race, and I'm not much of a runner. And I had to laugh as I've been talking to people and asking them, do you like running? And talking to different people, do you like working out? And there's two people that stick out to me, and they even attend here at Berean. I was talking to them, do you enjoy running? And they're like, the first time I see a person who goes out and runs and has a smile on their face, I will start running. And so maybe some of you kind of feel that same way about running of, okay, first time I see somebody who actually goes out and enjoys this and actually can express that they enjoy this while running, I would be happy to start running with them. But for the most part, when we watch people run, there's this look of agony or terror that's happening as they're trying to urge themselves on toward even just getting around the block. That's me. But one of the things that we're going to be talking about this morning is suffering. And so as I was thinking about suffering, I went to running because sometimes, as you know, if you're much of a runner, there's times when you go out and it is just agony. It's hard pushing. And sometimes when you're getting up out of bed even, you're like, man, why on earth am I getting up this early to go do this? This is just painful. And you get up and you start getting in the rhythm of things and you go out and somehow you seem to start kind of enjoying it. It does happen for some of you. Trust me. Just take my word for it, I guess. You won't see it on my face. But we're going to be talking about this issue of suffering, and Paul's going to be talking about how do we suffer and how do we suffer well. And as we've been working together on this theme, for those of you that are just joining us, we're working through Philippians and talking through this idea of together for the gospel. How is it that a group of people come together and can be about something bigger than themselves, the gospel, and do this well? Because the reality is, for many of you who know church or have been around church very long, man, church is ugly, it's messy, it's hard. Man, it's an easy place to get hurt. And Paul wants to come in and he wants to talk to a group of people and he has very specific thing that he wants to get across. There's a purpose that he's trying to achieve as he's thinking through this book of Philippians that he's trying to get across to these people. What he's looking at is he's looking to strengthen and to enhance their experience while striving together for the gospel. He's trying to accomplish that. He's trying to accomplish this as they come together for this message, the gospel. He wants to enhance and he wants to strengthen these people that as they come together, it actually makes this enjoyable, where they actually may occasionally smile. I know, it sounds funny. Church, smile, enjoyment. But he has this great and lofty view that this is actually a very good thing. And as he's writing this message to people, he's going to be writing and saying, listen, as I think of you all and this partnership that we have, I can't help but be joyful when I think of you. I can't help but be thankful for you. I love you all. As he's running this race, what's on his face? A smile. And then we'll look real quickly on where he is and the circumstances here in just a moment. So again, Paul is looking to strengthen, to enhance their experience while striving together for the gospel. So the things that we're going to look at this morning is specifically in relation to suffering. And the passage that we're going to be reading it has to do with suffering. And there's two things that we're going to focus on as he looks to strengthen and enhance this group of people and this experience that they have of what we call fellowship sometimes. It's more than food. And the two things that he's going to be working on with these people is he's going to have them rethink adversity. I want you to rethink this thing called suffering and what's happening. And I want you to see things from a different perspective. And Paul's going to try to give that perspective to a group of people, hoping that they don't just see it and go, oh, okay. but that they would actually embrace this perspective as well. And then the other thing that he's going to be doing is he's going to be looking at the motives that move us. And that's where we're really going to be talking this morning. What moves us as we're doing this thing called church, as we're maybe even going out and sharing, as we're being about the work that God has for us, what is it that really is compelling us? And Paul's really interested in that. And he's going to talk to the group of people about that. So I've asked Brady Johnson to go ahead and come up, and we're going to have different people that are going to be reading through the passage as we work our way through Philippians. And he's going to read the passage for us. And so if you wouldn't mind, I'm making him stand. So would you stand with us? It's not the only reason I'm making you stand, but stand in honor of the word. And Brady's going to lead us as we read through, as he reads through Philippians 1, 12 through 18. Go ahead.
I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole Imperial Guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice.
Amen. Go ahead and grab a seat. Well, that's the passage that we're going to be looking through this morning. But as I kind of mentioned, one of the things that I mentioned, the first thing that we think through with this is rethinking adversity. And the picture that I have behind me, there's an intention and a reason behind that. But we'll talk about that in just a moment. But I want you to think about that picture and writer. And the picture is obviously, if you can't see it from the back, it's an older picture. And there's a little bit of a mark on the left side, and that's an artillery shell that's blowing up. And then it's a rider that's on a horse. And what that horse is doing, it's rearing up and threatening to buck off the rider. So there's an explosion, causes the horse to buck, and the rider's about, I think he's going to stay on. How many else are with me? Yeah, a few. All right. I think he's got it. But threatening to throw off the rider. And that's important for us this morning to think through in Philippians and where Paul's talking about. Again, what he's talking about with this group of people. He just got done praying for this group of people that they would have this love that abounds more and more for one another. And then what he's going to start moving into is this ministry report of what's happened to him as where he is right now, he's in prison. Of all people that would know suffering, he's been wrongfully put in prison. Now he's in Rome, and he's sitting there awaiting a sentence that he doesn't know what's going to happen to him. He may be forced to actually be killed. He may be released. He doesn't know what's going to happen to him. And right now he's in this waiting period. So Paul is in prison, and he's writing this message to a group of people who are concerned for him because he's there, as he just mentioned, he's there because of Christ. He's been sharing the gospel, and that's what lands him there in prison. And so as he's going to be talking about this issue of suffering, it's important for us to have something in our mindset. And that's from Philippians 1, 29 through 30. And so in that passage, it says this. Philippians 1, 29 through 30. For it has been granted to you. Paul is talking about something that is going to be given to them like it's a gift. That word is grace. It's been graced to you. What a present that he's going to talk about here in just a moment. The gift that's being given is this. It's been graced to you. It's been granted to you. It's been gifted to you that for the sake of Christ, you should not only believe in him, but also what? For his sake. Say it with me. Suffer. Paul is talking about suffering, and he's saying, it's a gift. It's a gift that you'll actually suffer. Not only that you believe in him, but that you're going to suffer for his sake. That's where he's going to be heading in this whole thing. That's where he's going to be aiming. But even before he even says that in Philippians 27 through 28, what he's trying to get across to these people, he knows that they're going to be facing suffering. That's going to be an inevitable thing. And even when you look in 1 Timothy, one of the things that he shares is that those who are in Christ will suffer. That's just a reality. If you take on the name of Christ, that is a future that you can expect, a future that you can anticipate. It's going to happen. And he encouraged people as he shared this message, as he was going around from church to church, from place to place, saying, it's going to come, it's going to come, it's going to happen. If you want to follow Jesus, it's not going to be easy. They mistreated him, they're going to mistreat you. You stand up for this message, it's not going to be easy. But one of the things that he's encouraging this group of people and that he wants for this group of people is this. In verse 27, he says, only let your manner of life, the way that they're living, this collective mindset that he's trying to talk to them, be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or I'm absent, I may hear that you are standing firm in one spirit with one mind. He wants them to have a collective mindset. He wants them to have a collective mindset because suffering's going to come. It's going to be a reality for them. They knew it. From the moment that he came to Philippi, he was thrown in prison. They've seen him go through this. They know what that's like. But not only have they seen him go through that, later on in verse 30, it says that you too are going through the same thing that you saw that I went through. It didn't get any easier for this group of people. And what he wants for this group of people is something that will actually help them go through suffering. And what is that? He wants them to have a same mindset. Well, what is that mindset? And he defines it shortly. He says, with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel. And listen to the word he says in verse 28. And not frightened in anything by your opponents. Ty, if you can go to the next slide. Here's where this horse and rider come in. What Paul's trying to get across, what he's trying to aim at for this group of people before we even get into what he's going to start sharing with them, is his big long-term outlook on this is he wants them to strive side by side. If you can even imagine this, sometimes in military you might hear a leader going, stay together, stay together. Sometimes as I'm coaching a soccer team, I'm talking to the players and they're arranged out on the field and I'm, keep your formation. You got to keep your formation. If you lose that structure, it's actually going to make it a lot harder for us to pass through. It's going to make for holes in the defensive line. They're going to be able to pass easier. And Paul's looking at the people and he's saying, stay together. Stay together. Well, what's going to force them to scatter? What's going to push them to go away and come apart? And that word that he uses there is not be frightened by anything. It's only used one time in the New Testament. So it's not like I can look in other places to really see what he's trying to get across with that. But I think we can get a pretty clear picture. Don't be frightened. What happens when you get frightened? You move. If I were to sit here and play, do you ever play Bloody Knuckles when you were a kid? Why do you start flinching even before they move? I'm frightened. When I was playing with my brother, trust me, I had bruised knuckles, and I didn't want that. And I'd move my hands really quick because I didn't want to get hit in the knuckles. And he's looking at a group of people, and he's saying, don't be frightened. See, another guy named Plutarch, an older writer, he used this word, and the way that he used this word to describe actually a horse just like the one up here. That in battle, what would happen sometimes to a horse is it would get spooked. And he uses it to describe a horse that's spooked that kills the rider. And he's saying, I'm writing this to you. I want you to stay together. Because if you don't, there's a common thing that will happen when you're on your own, when you're not fighting and striving together. There's a temptation for you to be fearful. And people are going to get hurt. And I don't want that for you. I want something so much more. He's encouraging them to strive together for the sake of the gospel. Doesn't want them to be frightened by what's going on around them. So as we move our way into the text that we're looking at this morning, Paul is trying to give perspective to keep them from falling apart, from moving apart from one another. And he says, I want you to know, brothers, in verse 12, that what's happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. And you can go back to that slide, Ty. I'm going to be talking about that, the one with the horse. As Paul is looking at some of these different things in this passage, he's looking at what his current situation is happening. He says, listen, I want you to know that what's happening to me, my current circumstance, where I am right now, this is a really common way of opening up a Greek letter. If you were to read Greek letters and a person talking about what's happening, you'd use the same exact language that Paul just uses. I just want you to know what's happening to me. And then what you would expect in a Greek letter is, here's what's going on. Negative, good. Here's how the food is in prison. And here's what things are like. I got roaches for friends. But no. All sorts of different descriptions of what's happening. But Paul doesn't do that. Instead, he does something that's really uncommon. Most letters would start off with a normal introduction. But then he actually breaks rank and he does something very different. He actually doesn't talk about his circumstances. What does he talk about instead? He doesn't say, listen, here's what the accommodations are like. Here's what the soldier looks like that's next to me. He doesn't spend time with that. What does he start talking about? The gospel. The gospel is advancing. See, where I am right now, I'm in prison, but what you really need to know right now is that what's happening to me, skip that. The gospel is moving forward. It's advancing. And how does he start describing it? There's a couple different ways that he describes it, of how this is advancing. The first way that he describes that is as he looks around, he says, listen, all through the imperial guard. Now, the imperial guard, these were like the elite of the soldiers there in Rome. Sometimes there's even situations in Roman history where these elite guard actually had huge sway on what was happening in the Roman government. And Paul's saying to a city that is a group of people that are very loyal to Rome, he's saying, listen, guess what's happening? I am here in prison right now. And because of my chains, because of my imprisonment, I'm not going to talk to you about how bad it smells here or a person that I'm tied to. I'm not even going to talk to you about my inconvenience that this is causing in my life. Why? Because the gospel's moving forward. God is doing something where I am. He had a reason for me being here. See, my affliction is actually to be a part of this gospel moving in and throughout this group of people, the imperial guard. And then he even uses not only the imperial guard, but all the rest. This isn't all the rest of the people. This is the rest of Caesar's household, the other servants in Caesar's household. See, instead of just focusing on himself, which is so easy for us to do as we're going through difficulty, and I was thinking through this myself, that sometimes as I serve and I go through difficulty, the temptation for me is to go, oh man, how was your week? Boy, I was just really serving Jesus this week. It was hard. And my goodness, I was praying and my knees were just really sore, but I was praying for you. So easy to get into complain mode, isn't it? And what I'm essentially trying to do is, where am I drawing the attention? I'm drawing it back to me. And what Paul's saying is, listen, I want you to know what's happening to me. I want you to know about my circumstance and where my focus is. It's not on me. The gospel's moving forward. How does he find joy in the circumstance? The gospel. It's moving forward. It's why we have this relationship. Why is he telling him that the gospel's moving forward? Why isn't he saying, listen, I'm stuck here for a while. I don't know how long I'm going to be here. That may tell them, listen, maybe he doesn't need our support still. But he's telling them, listen, the gospel's moving forward. What is that going to do to their hearts? Oh, wow, God is still doing something. There's still something that he's doing there in Rome. It's going to encourage their hearts. The other thing that he mentions is that most of the brothers, and we look down in the next verse in this passage, and it says, most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. So not only is this gospel message, is it starting to move through Caesar's ranks and through his officials and through other people that are serving, but what his imprisonment, what his chains are doing for other believers, whether it's there in Rome or all throughout the Roman Empire, people are observing what's happening and what is it doing in their heart? What is it doing in their mind? They're growing courageous. They're wanting to be out and sharing. You have to think through how conflicted that is, how mixed up that is. When we think of being in prison and you see a person going into prison like that, how many people would go, man, this is what I really want to sign up for? But this is the strange thing about the gospel. Gospel is, there are so many different paradoxes with the gospel. Through death comes life. Through sacrifice comes life. We can see it in other things that we maybe look at in seeds. Unless a seed falls to the ground and dies, it won't reproduce. And Paul's looking at what's happening and he's saying, listen, I'm rethinking what's happening in my life, the suffering that's happening. How do I have joy in the midst of what's going on around me? Is God is doing something. He's doing something in the people's lives. He's doing something in Christians around me, and that is a common thing. I don't know how many of you enjoy reading biographies, but one of the first ones that I came across when I first became a believer was Jim Elliot. He was a missionary in Ecuador, and one of the things that he did with a few other people, Nate Saint, and I'm forgetting some of the other people, is that they wanted to reach unreached tribes. And so they go out, Nate Saint has the plane, and he's flying over these areas, and eventually they find a place to land where they can have an encounter with these group of people. And as they try to work to share the gospel with them, eventually what happens is all the missionaries that were there are killed. What happened in light of that? Did people that heard about these stories, did they go, oh my goodness, I don't want to go there. Oh man, that is a crazy place. One of the people that was still alive during that time that vividly remembers that is my grandma. And I'll never forget her talking about what happened. She remembers praying for even people that were there in LaGrange, Wyoming. People going, I want to go to Ecuador. I want to be a part of helping this mission continue. People need to know about Jesus. See, the craziest thing that happens is as suffering happens to a group of people, it does what the unthinkable. We would normally think a person wouldn't want to do that, like running, for crying out loud. Nobody smiles when they're running. But for some reason, the Spirit of God moves in a believer in such a way that as suffering happens in an area, it inspires, it encourages people around them. And they go, I want to go. I want to be a part of that. Man, God is moving there. Send me. I want to go. And it encourages people to go out. And Paul's observing this. And he's going, he even uses this word that he's going, actually, here's what's happening. It's almost like he's in wonderment that this is even happening. God is using this. And he's in wonderment over what's happening around him. Well, the next part that I want to talk about, and this is where we'll spend a little bit more time, is motives that move. Okay, great. So he talks through that, listen, the gospel is starting to move, and man, this is so great that all through the ranks of Caesar, there are people that are starting to hear about this message. They know why I'm here. Why I was once chained, and usually when a person's chained, I would know. I've been there once. You have control over that person. But what Paul sees with his chains, instead of someone having control over him, he actually sees the chains as liberating him to start sharing a message with other people. He's in bondage, but he sees, oh wait, while I'm in bondage, I have a captive audience. There's some guys that are chained to me 24/7. Maybe they need to hear about Jesus. And he starts sharing. And what Paul's going to start addressing now is, what is it that moves us? He talks about this reality, and I'll read that verse again in verse 14. He says this, and most of the brothers, again, that most of the brothers is, he's over half, a majority of the people who are Christians are moved to start sharing Christ because of his chains in verse 14. So an overwhelming majority are now starting to be confident in the Lord by his imprisonment, and they're much more bold to speak the word without fear. That word bold, that they're actually knowing something is probably going to happen to them by them opening their mouth, and they're willing to do it. Like the missionaries that I talked about who, after Nate Saint and Jim Elliot passed, they're willing to go, send me. But Paul wants to get to the heart of the issue is, Let's look underneath the hood, kind of like a good mechanic. Come over here and let's pop the hood and let's see what's actually running this vehicle. Let's hear and let's listen to see if we hear anything that's maybe knocking in the engine. Because he's not just concerned about what's happening right there. He's concerned, where is this thing going to go? How is this thing going to continue? And so the next part that he addresses, and we'll talk about this a while, is some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, verse 15, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I'm put here for the defense of the gospel. Some people are actually moved to do this for the right reasons. Some people not. The former proclaim Christ out of rivalry, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. And so he addresses that with the people. So he's contrasting two different people and what's motivating these people. There's one group that are motivated by an ill will. And he says, listen, the motives of these people, they're motivated by envy. They're motivated by rivalry. They're motivated by selfish ambition. They're motivated by not being sincere. Meaning, there's maybe one motive that would be out there, but it's hidden what's really actually the agenda in their heart. And then there's another group that instead of being motivated by that, he's saying, listen, they're motivated, they're confident in the Lord, and there's a genuine love that is compelling this group of people, and they're moving forward. To talk about this first group real quick, the ill will, the motives of these people, it says envy and rivalry, selfish ambition. When I first read through that, and even as I first started studying, I was like, what on earth, how does that even work? How does a person get motivated out of envy, out of rivalry? This doesn't seem to make sense. Here's what I want us to make as far as observation and understand this. Who are these people? Who are these two groups of people that Paul's talking about? Both of these people are believers. So first and foremost, I want you to understand that this group of people, the ill will people, these are believers. He's just talked about, listen, so many of the believers are now motivated to speak up. Now we're looking at the people that have been motivated to speak up. They're Christians. Why is that important? We'll talk about that in here in just a second, because this is actually critical for us. So they're Christians that are motivated to say this. Not only are they Christians, but they're actually speaking the right message. They're proclaiming accurately the word of God. It's not like they're speaking the wrong message. They're not twisting it. He's not concerned with them somehow speaking a gospel that is contrary to what he's been teaching or any of the other apostles. But there's something radically different about this group of people. And it has to do with motives. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. So envy and rivalry and selfish ambition, not sincerely. Seems to be that with this group of people, what's really motivating and what's really compelling them, if we're really to get at the bottom of this, selfish ambition, we can see that that's listed as the flesh in Galatians 5. The flesh is what's motivating this group of people. It's the thing that's actually compelling them and moving them forward. They have selfish ambition. They have rivalry. And it's not from a genuine heart out of a love for God and a love for who he is and what he's done. Not even out of a love for Paul. But this group of people actually wants to inflict harm on Paul. How? I don't know. And the context doesn't even really tell us exactly how. Is this internally? Are they wanting Paul to feel horrible that as he's in prison, he can't be out sharing the gospel and they're out sharing the gospel? I don't know. Is this inflicting more pain on him as they're out sharing the gospel? This is going to be way more difficult for him. He actually may be killed because of them sharing the gospel. Possibly. More likely. This word selfish ambition, you want to know what's used of a lot? We're heading toward November, and we get to see a lot of it sometimes during election. Every so often when you're watching political campaigns, it's great when politicians are talking about their views and the things that they stand for, right? I can follow that. But what I hate and when I start turning off things is when it really just turns to smear campaign. Just so you know, this person did this, this, and this. And that's what selfish ambition, that's how it's used in Greek. It's a person who's trying to undermine another person to bring them to themselves. And I think that gives us a really good idea of what this group of people are doing to Paul. See, instead of being motivated and compelled and going, listen, I believe in Paul that he is a called person of God. I believe in this message, and I want to go out and help other people know about who Jesus is and what he did. Instead of being compelled by that, what they're wanting to do is they're potentially seeing Paul winning people and going, I'd like to have a piece of that action. I'd like people to think I'm somebody. I'd like to win people to myself, and so I'm going to go out and I'm going to share and win people to me. Now, they're not overtly saying that. They're not going out and going, like me, like Facebook. But through various different means and how they're sharing and how they're talking even about Paul, what's happening is they're trying to win people to themselves. Liking them. Liking their perspective, liking their philosophy, liking their way of doing things rather than Paul. And Paul is going to be talking about this group of people, and he's trying to contrast and going, listen, there's motivations that can be stirring in a person's heart, and they look good. They have the right message. They're Christians. But their motivation is twisted at a fundamental level. It's not motivated by Christ. It's not motivated out of love. And he contrasts that with the other group of people who are confident in the Lord. And they love Paul. They love who he is. They believe in what's happened in his life. And as they're coming alongside, they see that he's in prison. And they want to be a part and help. They're going, listen, while he's not out there, I need to be out there. I'm going to be sharing the gospel. He can't be in my area. I'm going to get out and start talking to my friends about Jesus. Not to win people to myself, but because Jesus is worth it, and I love this person. I believe in what he stands for, and I'm compelled to do the same. And Paul's looking and trying to contrast two different groups of people that are Christians. He's concerned for these different people. Why? So what? So what? What's the big deal with Paul? Why would he be addressing some of these different things? Well, one of the things that he's going to be talking about in Philippians 2:3 is do nothing from selfish ambition. Why? In Galatians 5, he says, listen, don't walk by the flesh. The fruit, the evidence of the flesh in your life, it's so clear, selfish ambition. He doesn't want these people to live this way. And one of the things that Paul, I think, is doing in all of this is he's going, listen, and he's going to address it here in just a moment. Listen, there are other people that are out here doing this. But I'm writing to you because I'm concerned and I want you to have the right motivation. I want you to be compelled by a love for me, genuine love, a sincere love, a confidence in the Lord that compels you to get out and do this. Because it's going to be better for you and it's going to be better for everybody. And he's compelling them along this route. Now let's think through just practically. For us as a church today, how did this even happen? I had to ask myself this question. How did these people get here? What happened along the way as they're out and they're talking and all of a sudden now they're being compelled and they're motivated by selfish ambition. Now they're motivated by envy. Now they're actually motivated by ulterior motives. How does that happen in a person? I don't think the person genuinely set out and went, you know what? What I'm going to do today is I really just want to wreck Paul's life. I want to make things miserable for Paul. I don't think that happened with this group of people. And I don't think that's what happens today in churches. I don't think the person sits out going, you know what? I really don't like the way that Tristan's leading worship. I really don't like how Ty does sound. I really don't like how this leader does this. And so, you know what? I'm going to start winning people to myself instead. See, I think it happens way more subtle, way more sneaky. See, a heart is deceptive, what Scripture says above all else. Who can trust it? And I think there's some people that as they're there and they're witnessing what's happening to Paul, I think there's a temptation for some people to go, you know what? Paul's in prison. You know what? If he would just do things like I did things, I think the outcome would be way better. And then what they do is they start talking to people and going, listen, you know that Paul, he's off in prison. Man, I just don't think he's doing things right, do you? And what's subtly starting to happen is they're making this twist and they're going, I think we could be way more effective if we do it this way. Come with me. Come with me. And it's dividing a group of people, and it's they're now starting to speak ill of one another, and now it's starting to break down this thing that Paul is concerned about and saying, listen, I don't want you to actually be against one another. I don't want you to run away from one another and fear as suffering starts to happen. I want you to strive side by side together. I want you to stay together. That's where your strength is. And this group of people just don't quite believe it. And so they slowly start to jump ship. Slowly start to undermine that person that is around them. And it looks really nice. It looks great. Boy, I've been really praying for so-and-so. But I'm just concerned about their leadership. But what it's doing is it's subtle. And it's fleshy. And it's really ultimately drawing people going, listen to me, I think I got this thing figured out. Wooing a person in. How does this impact us as a church? I have an illustration and then questions for us to think through this. When I was thinking through this for a church, I was thinking of two different scenarios that if you can bear with me this morning, join with me in thinking through this. Imagine yourself in this scenario. Paul's talking about fellowship, a group of people who are coming together for a common purpose, a common good. They're bringing different skills and other things in that they have to try to move something forward to a common end. Imagine you're at Frontier Days in standing room. Everybody cringes. And all of a sudden, as you're standing there in standing room, someone comes walking along. Maybe they've had too much to drink. Who knows? They step on your foot, and you're walking too, and it causes you to fall into the person in front of you. My question is this. Everyone is there. Why? Man, I just want to listen to good music. I'm there for the enjoyment of music, listening to the music. I'm there to have fun. And this relates back to church. How is that? As you fall to the ground, you maybe push other people. What is your instant reaction that happens inside of you? It's going to be different for each and every one of you. For one, maybe they get up and they go, what are you doing? You yell at the person. Why? You yell at them because they've interrupted your experience of the show. I'm here to enjoy this concert, and your drunk self is coming over here and tripping me up, and I'm falling all over myself. What's wrong with you? And you start yelling at the person. They're getting in the way of this common purpose that we're gathered together for. Or maybe you shove the person back because they're getting in the way of things. But now I want you to think through a different scenario. And Ty, I have a picture, I believe, after the next slide. I want you to imagine yourself in this. This is how Romans would fight, and essentially what it is Romans would have these tall shields. This would have been something common in Paul's day. They'd have these tall shields, and they would line up side by side, and sometimes they would even come down and put their shield on the ground if they were fighting a battle to try to hold things out, and it was a great way because the thing's like a tank, and they could really effectively fight a battle. I want you to imagine yourself in the ranks on the outside, one of the ones holding the shield. And all of a sudden, in the shuffle and the commotion of the fight, what happens is you're trying to push and move forward. All of a sudden, someone trips you. How do you feel? What's your response? What do you do? What do the people around you do? Tell me. What would a person do? You see something like that happen, knowing that that's your line of defense. If that person falls, what do? If you're the person standing behind that person, you pick them up. You see them fall and you pick them back up. If they can't get up, their shield is wedged on the ground. What do? You take your shield on the top, and you step over that person, you put the shield down, and you step in front of them and block it so that that person doesn't get hurt and the people around you don't get hurt. See, I think in church what we have is we have a group of people that far too often we have this misconceived notion that here's what church is. It's Frontier Days. We're here for the show. It's great. I love it. And then this person comes along, steps on my toe, and I fall over, and I'm going, what are you doing? Why can't you be more like dot, dot, dot? It doesn't only happen in churches, but it happens in marriages. It happens in relationships. It happens in work relationships. It happens all over the place. And I look at this person, and I go, you're getting in the way of my whatever. Instead of having this mentality that Paul has of a church, he's going, listen, I want you to strive side by side together for the gospel. Which means as one person goes down, you don't just walk on them. You pick them back up. You pick your shield back up. And you block any of the things that are coming at you. And you try to protect that person. Paul's concern right now for the group of people, I don't think this was happening in Philippi right now. I think people loved Paul. I think Paul loves the people of Philippi. But what Paul is observing is this type of mentality, this mindset is permeating through the church right now. And he's concerned about it and he's saying, listen, this is happening. Know your motives. Know what's going on underneath because eventually it will lead to this place where you just step on one another to keep getting ahead. Instead of plopping the shield down in front of that person, picking them up and throwing them back in line, and maybe another person behind you going, here, I see you got stabbed. Let me bandage that while we keep moving forward. Instead, we're confused. We don't see that there's actually a battle going on. There's a mission going on. And it's important that all of us arrive. So a question that I had this morning is this. How do I tell? How do you tell? Paul's concern was that people were sincere. How do you tell? How do I know that my motives are right and what's compelling me is going in the right direction? How do I know? If you're sitting here going, oh, I'm good, be careful. The heart is deceptive above all else. Who can trust it? It means I don't trust my own heart. You shouldn't either. And Paul's looking at a group of people and he's trying to share and going, listen, here's the different things that can happen and that I'm observing. It can happen to you. Don't let it go that direction. Stay together. How do I tell if I'm being sincere? Well, one person in the group might say, well, it's if I'm confident in the Lord. Do you really think that the people who had ill will were not confident in the Lord as they were out sharing the gospel, trying to win people to themselves? I think they were pretty confident that that's what God wanted them to do. I don't think they could see what was going on at a heart level. Was it accuracy of the message? The people were out and they were sharing a genuine message of the gospel. It wasn't about who was right and who was wrong in sharing the gospel. Paul's going, they're accurate in the message. They're both sharing an accurate message. Was it about how I feel about what I'm doing? Boy, I feel really like this is the right thing. I think both people felt like they were doing the right thing. Is it about the results? According to Paul, it seems like the gospel is still moving forward. It's advancing, despite people's motives. In spite of you. That should be an encouragement and a discouragement. In spite of you, the gospel moves forward. What Paul points at, how do I tell if I'm being sincere? It's not my confidence in the Lord. It's not in the accuracy of my message. It's not in how I feel about what I'm doing. It's not about the results. I want you to do something real quick. Look around you. How you treat these people. That's how you tell. That's how you tell. That's how Paul's pointing out. That's how you tell if you're sincere or not. How is it impacting the people around you? How is it impacting this? It's not just about yourself. Again, Paul's not writing a message for a person to sit there like this and about my own personal thing. He's writing a message to a group of people saying, listen, I want you all to strive together. It impacts each and every one of you. And each and every one of you are going to have to look at your motives. And how you'll see it is how you're interacting with one another. See, it's even more than just when someone's present. Because the reality for Paul, where is he right now? He's not in Philippi. It's when he's not around people. That's when we get to see sincerity happening. How do I treat others when they're not there? Some questions that I have for us this morning in closing are this. And it's in this relationship to being sincere. Do you get upset? How do you evaluate, is my question, whether I'm sincere or not? Do I get upset at the success of others? Do you get upset when someone else is doing well? Maybe they don't do it like you do. Maybe you're sitting there going, oh man, I just hate how they do this. And there's success that happens, and you look at what's happening, and it kind of makes you angry underneath. Does that happen to you? What Paul would say is, your motive, at a motive level, you're not sincere. You're not being compelled by the right thing. Do you celebrate failures of others? Understand this. This isn't blatant and open and outright looking at another person going, ha ha, he fell. It's way more subtle than that. It's about judging others in a way that validates or wins people to yourself. Does that make sense? I look at what other people are doing and I judge what's happening to them and it wins people to me. I may even talk about what happens in a way that helps win people to myself and go, boy, I wouldn't do it like that. And the reason that that failed is they probably didn't do it like me. I'm winning people to myself and I'm rejoicing in the downfall of another person. Are you compelled by likes? Or genuinely, do you love others and want to help out? Are you motivated by likes? Are you just doing what you're doing to gain an audience and gain favor with other people? Or are you genuinely motivated by, as you see a person fall down, maybe they haven't done it quite right or how you would do it, you see them fall down and you don't rejoice at that person that's fallen down. You go over and you pick them up. If you need to, you jump over that person, you grab the shield and you protect that person and the other people who are there with you. Because we're all in this together. We're striving side by side. Is that your heart? Do you love being the savior or the hero? Do you have to go help people so that I like being the savior? I like how it makes me feel. I like how I get to be the one who rescues you. Is that what compels you? Maybe insincere. Another question that I'd ask you to do is, who in here, look around this room, who in here would it be okay to hurt or to cause to suffer in order to advance your own way, your own name, your own cause? See, I've seen that happen in churches. Maybe it's you're involved in doing a small group a certain way, and nobody else does it like we do. And you start talking around other people going, boy, if they only did things like we did, maybe they'd be better. And Paul's warning, and he's going, don't be insincere. It's the wrong motivation. Be compelled by the love of Christ. Be compelled by his love for those people and pray for them. Next question, do you enhance others' view of the people around you so that Christ might be seen? Or do you undermine them to win people to yourself? So easy to talk ill of other people. Titus 3:2 says this, do you speak well of everyone? Titus says to speak well of everyone. Titus 3:2 also says, show perfect courtesy to all people, even those not like you. Paul was interested in a group of people, interested in them suffering well. Do we have the right view of what's happening in here? Will we have that view that is like that group of soldiers? Where when somebody falls down, I'm looking over and I see that person and I'm pulling them back up. Or will I look at that person that falls and step on their head so that I can get to the next rank, that next line? Paul wants a group of people. What he sees is what's best for that group and for this partnership that they have, to be compelled sincerely by a love for Paul and a love for Christ. Let's pray. Jesus, be with us this week. God, as we think through just this message, and I'm not going to lie, this is hard when you start thinking through at a heart level. What is it that genuinely motivates me? God, I pray for people here in the congregation. Pray for us that you would help us to ask those tough questions. What is it that's really motivating and compelling me? Is it genuinely a concern for other people that's around me? A concern for other people knowing Jesus Christ? Or is it simply to get likes from people and, man, it looks like that person's so successful and we gain fame and importance and significance? Jesus, help us to have the right motives. Jesus, in light of all of that, we need you. Because I know that sometimes my heart is not motivated correctly. Forgive us for the times that we're motivated wrongly. And help us to be motivated rightly by your gospel and by love for one another. Amen.